Hello and welcome back to PaleoCast. My name is Dave Marshall and you're listening to episode 147, which is the second part of our look at the paleontological sciences within computer games with Thomas Clements and Jake Atterby, both of the University of Birmingham and co-hosts of the PaleoCast Gaming Network. Here, we're continuing the conversation by looking at some of the best and worst representations of paleo in computer games and asking the question of whether or not we should be attempting to learn from them in the first place. But before we get started, I first have to apologise for the delay in releasing this second part, and you all know the reason behind it by now, so yes, I was called off for a lovely 3 week stay on an oil rig doing biostratigraphy in the middle of the North Sea, which I can inform you wasn't nearly as much fun as either playing or talking about paleontological computer games. As always, please check out our website for the multimedia that supports this episode, as well as the PaleoCast Gaming Network's YouTube channel. And if you enjoy the discussion today, please help give us a boost on social media where any likes, shares, or comments would be greatly appreciated. I hope you enjoy this episode. So, who are some of the worst culprits? Which games? Which titles?
I don't think you can necessarily say which title is the worst, because lots of games have good aspects and then also have bad aspects. And I actually don't think it's particularly useful to specifically target a game and say this is a really egregious example of X, Y, or Z. And there are plenty of examples. I think we can safely say that the sort of monstrification first-person shooter genre is probably the most egregious offender. And because we see these tropes where, you know, these animals are just coming towards you, trying to eat you all the time. And as Jake has already pointed out, you know, completely denaturalifying them and making them just seem monsters. You know, by far and away, when we looked at all the games that were on Steam at the time, you know, by far and away, I think it was like 60-something percent, 65% of all games that we found featuring paleontology were those type of games. So I think those are probably the worst offenders in that way. But I think the problem is that when we move towards all these topics that we've talked about and we've gone through quite a lot of different tropes already, it's the games that sell themselves to be hyper-accurate or very realistic, but then they contain a lot of these tropes. I think those are the ones that science communicators need to keep their eyes on the most, if that makes sense. Because they're the ones that do impart a lot of knowledge to players, and then that does come back because then people then might perceive that that is how paleontology works, or you know, might think that that is actual science fact, if that makes sense.
Okay, so could I flip it on its head then and say which is possibly the best of the games?
Yeah, we should probably give some praise to some titles, do you think?
Yeah, let's praise our favourite paleo games.
I think the best game that's come out recently is Fossil Corner, which I know you played recently, Dave, on the live stream, which I think is the most accurate depiction of a paleontologist's work because it involves phylogeny and answering emails, which is about 50-50 distribution of my work.
Oh my goodness. Oh no. One of my favourite paleo games is a game called Abzu. It's not a realistic paleo game. Like, it's not designed to be realistic or particularly educational. But what Abzu does really well is that it allows the player to interact with a huge range of ancient animals, ranging from, you know, tiny little shelled organism and trilobites from the Cambrian explosion 500 odd million years ago, all the way through to giant marine reptiles and all sorts of weird amphibians and like Diplocolus and Tiktaalik and things like that, and lots of different paleo fish. So Abzu, and it's a really chill, very sort of relaxing game. So Abzu is definitely up there. I think we can't not praise Animal Crossing.
Oh my God, absolutely not.
Animal Crossing genuinely has been revolutionary in how it sort of showcases paleontology. I mean, It simplifies, obviously, collecting fossils, obviously, but the way that it shows the fossils being mounted in museums, and the fact that they are all put on a tree of life so that you can walk, you know, along, what's the right way of saying this in a simple way, that you could basically follow from the beginnings of time and then follow all the different branches on the tree of life.
There's even an empty spot in the tree where you can put your human player character to see where you fit in the tree as well.
And I also loved as well that they included non-animal fossils. So they included traces and fossil poo, fossil coprolites. Mm. And obviously, whenever you find a fossil, you take it to Blathers, who runs the museum, and Blathers tells you facts about the animals, and the facts are genuinely really, really good. And they're really well written as well, because they don't come across as sort of really scientific and preachy, but actually they're very, very accurate. So Animal Crossing definitely is up there with, gets very high praise from me.
Yeah, Animal Crossing as well came out like almost suspiciously in well-timed for the first lockdown. Having a complete virtual museum to do outreach in was just awesome. I still think that it gets used by museums doing like live streams and sort of virtual tours of the museum. I've even done one, which is now really out of date because loads of things, Paleontology moves so quickly, loads of things in it are now out of date. I should do another one at some point soon.
Yeah, it'd be nice if someone made a virtual museum. Should we be trying to learn from computer games? Is there any problem to say, okay, over here, this is your entertainment. Yeah, you've got computer games, you've got films like Jurassic Park. Over on this side is all your educational stuff. You've got a documentary, you've got museums and stuff. Do we need to have educational material in all of it, or can we just like write off, just like don't expect too much from this side?
That is a very good question. And that is kind of why we wrote this paper, is because, you know, people have been using video games. So, I mean, there are two major types of video games, right? There are video games that are the sort of ones that you go down to the shop and buy. And then there are video games which are specifically educational. And typically, educational games aren't known to be super fun or replayable, or they're very narrow in their focus. Whether, you know, the people that make the game is trying to educate you on one particular aspect of something. So it could be, you know, how a virus works, or how a volcano works, or, you know, how deep sea exploration works. And entertainment video games, you know, aren't designed for that. And people have, though, used, you know, commercial video games as educational tools. And a really good example is that, you know, in the Assassin's Creed games, in the more recent ones, you know, they're hyper realistic settings of cities. You can turn off the sort of the game mode and just explore the city, and it teaches you about the city and the history of the cities. So there are aspects, but I think the problem is that most of these video games, because they're not designed to be educational, they need to be vetted. And if you are an educator, it takes a lot of time and effort to go through and vet the video games, which is basically why we wrote this paper. So you don't have to go through all the different video games. If you want to teach about evolution, then there is a section in our paper which talks about the games that do evolution well. And that's basically why we did that, so that you can use these video games as educational tools.
Actually, Assassin's Creed has a really interesting parallel for like a non-paleo example of this. In one of the Assassin's Creed games, you can climb around Notre Dame in France. And after that burned down, there was talk that maybe the 3D models and assets that they created for that game could be used in sort of restoring it one day in the future. But unfortunately, they can't, because even though from the outside it looks pretty much exact, the inside is completely different because they've had to accommodate the player. There's like little, you know, places where the player could swing and climb around, and they've made some of the ledges a bit wider so that you can roll around and fight people up there. And I was thinking about this literally on before we started recording this, how that's like the perfect parallel of this, where you have superficially a really nice just Touchstone to do enough education, but obviously science communicators or educators in general need to be aware that they're not designed to be educational. They're designed entertainment first. It's just a really lovely coincidence that we get this little taste of education tied in with it, with a massive budget behind it.
Okay, and when we're talking about education, I want to make a split between formal education and informal education. So formal would be in schools, in museums, and places traditionally linked to learning, and informal would be at home that you just get passively or for enjoyment. So is there a place for video games to teach about paleontology in both of those settings, the formal and the informal?
Is this where we talk about your museum?
No. well, you can do. Please feel very free to give me a free plug on my own PaleoCast.
I think that video games are a huge amount of people play video games, and that there is, I think, a lot of potential for building educational settings within a video game format, a bit like what you're doing with your virtual Natural History Museum. But I mean, Animal Crossing is an example of that, right? It's effectively about, collecting different organisms in the same way that a museum used to do, or some still do, but and then learning about those animals and teaching people about them. And I think that is, both informal and formal education in its own format. And that we've talked about, my mind's gone blank, Fossil Corner. That's another example that has, but I think for those kind of games, you need to be into fossils in the first place to kind of find them. Does that make sense? So it's kind of a bit of a difficult question, I think.
Okay, so what I'd be getting at is, can you imagine any situation where you go into school and you're like, Mr. Marshall, the teacher comes in and says, right, kids, today we're going to be playing Fossil Corner, and all the kids go nuts and we all learn about evolution for the day. Is there a place? Could they be used for that?
I mean, well, I had that at school. At school,
what school
played,
did you go to?
We played Rome Total War at school to learn about the Roman and Carthaginian conflict.
I did not know that.
So, yes.
Where did you grow up on Millionaire Island?
There was only one computer.
And right. Just 30 kids crowded around it.
Yeah.
But I think that's a really lovely point, though. I think it could very much be possible. There just isn't you would need a lot of computing power to really get away with it. Like, I was thinking the other day how amazing, not just for paleontology, well, not paleontology at all, for teaching geology and geography, Microsoft Flight Simulator is incredible. It's literally a one-to-one reconstruction of the entire planet that you can fly around, you can look into volcanoes and down rivers and valleys and gorges. And, it's so incredible. But that game needs a very beefy computer to run halfway decently. So yes, it would be amazing to use that in a classroom, but it's not realistic at this moment in time. Does that make sense?
Mm. But I mean, like, during the COVID pandemic, certain universities had virtual field trips, didn't they? Where they used gaming technology in order to take their students out into virtual field sites to learn about geology and geological processes. So I mean, I think this is probably a very burgeoning and very small area, but I wouldn't be surprised that within my children's or my children's children's lifetime, so long as we're not all drowned because the ice caps have melted and the earth is not on fire, then I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't use more interactive, sort of game style learning systems in their everyday teaching. I genuinely wouldn't be surprised by that, especially with like VR and stuff becoming as high-tech as it is now, and affordable.
Yeah, and young people are obviously very familiar with them. I guess as well, even though some schools, or a lot of schools, might not have the ability to use them that well, there's still videos and live streams of these games that you can watch. That's very accessible and is increasingly popular as well.
Kind of like on YouTube.
Yes.
Indeed.
Are there any channels that you could recommend?
I cannot think of any.
No, I can't think of any either, yeah.
Maybe the audience knows some. So, tell us where the PaleoCast Gaming Network came from and what its relevance to all of this would be.
Well, it came from you.
I was going to say.
Surely you should be doing... Should we interview you now?
Yeah go on. Switch it around.
Right, so I should be like, hi, I'm Thomas, and this is Jake, and we're interviewing Dave Marshall for PaleoCast, all about the PaleoCast Gaming Network. There you go. There's an intro for you. Right there.
What's your first question?
Why did you come up with the PaleoCast? I'll tell you what. First question is, why did you think that video games were a good educational tool?
Because they're an incredibly... they're a hook. They get people interested. Once I get my head into a game, I'm just gone. I'm just there engaging with it. And for kids, especially games, you know, you can't get a kid off an iPad anymore once they get on. Games are just fundamentally built to engage you with stuff. Yeah. And if you can put educational content within that and serve it up to them in parallel, as well as the entertainment, then you've got a recipe for getting educational content into minds.
It's like what you were saying before, Thomas, about how games specifically designed to be educational are often very boring and people don't really engage with them. But if you give it an education sort of tucked away inside a game that they're already enjoying, you can kind of trick them.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people... I don't want to cast aspersions on listeners and stuff, but I think a lot of people who don't play video games very regularly, I don't think they appreciate quite how engaging and addictive video games can be. But also, you know, at the moment, there's a huge industry in watching other people play video games. That might sound absolutely bizarre, but, you know, on platforms on the internet, like on YouTube and on Twitch, people spend hours and hours and hours watching other people play games. And we've seen the rise of, like, you know, paleontologists. We have a YouTube channel where we talk about video games, but we see, like, started to see people now, paleontologists streaming on Twitch and getting hundreds of thousands of views talking about science while they're playing video games. So the video game itself is not designed to be educational, but with the right combination of scientific engagement and outreach, and someone who is charismatic in driving that, they are a really good tool for engaging and talking to people about paleontological science, which is why we thought writing this paper was very important.
And creating the PaleoCast Gaming Network was also important.
Yeah, exactly. And the PaleoCast Gaming Network at the time, you know, it filled that niche where, you know, no one was really talking about how video games, you know, yes, we can all talk about the bad aspects of video games, but no one really was talking about the really good stuff and the exciting stuff within the video games. And I think that's what we tried to do with the channel, you know, when we designed it, was to talk about some of the good things that are there as well as the bad things.
Or just what the science is as well. Using it as a vehicle.
Yeah.
We've seen a raptor come running at you and it's trying to rip your face off. But how did raptors run? What was their ecology actually like? What kinds of things were they doing in real life? You can use the events that happen in game as a focal point, as a starting point for a conversation of what the actual science really is.
It's also worth pointing out just how positive the response to the PaleoCast Gaming Network channel has been from game developers as well. Like, I did a video about dragon homology in Skyrim, and the designer of the Skyrim dragons, like, shared the video and thought it was really cool. And then the developers of American Truck Simulator are now really keen to where there are these localities where in the real world you could hop out of your truck and look at fossils preserved in the rocks around you. They want to add information to their game because already they're wanting to add information about the history of where you are, like the sort of human history. It would be so easy just to write up a few paragraphs and just slot those in. They're so keen for it.
Yeah, and I think also, just like, you know, lastly on this sort of side of things, it's just by showcasing these games and, you know, by, you know, paleontologists streaming on Twitch or on YouTube, like we do, whatever, it does kind of humanize the people that actually do the science. So it's not just, you know, these sort of mythical scientists who wear fedoras out in the field, you know, on their own. But you know, do you know what I mean? It's making, you know, especially on Twitch and on YouTube when we're live streaming and stuff, you know, people can actually ask you questions in real time. And I think that is something which is completely new, realistically, that you can reach so many people at one time and you can have a shared experience together via a video game, but yet at the same time be educational. And I think that is something which is genuinely groundbreaking and really, really cool.
Yeah, I agree.
So what do you see as the future of paleontology and computer games?
Lots more first-person shooters.
Is it just the continuation of the same?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I think that there is a growing market for hyper-realistic, and I say that I did the little air quotes with my fingers there. You know, dinosaur simulators, games like Saurian, you know, in the last couple of years have got super, super popular, especially with people who are already interested in paleontology and dinosaurs, especially. So I wouldn't be surprised to see the proliferation of more and more sort of simulator style games where you can play as the dinosaurs. And, you know, if you're a herbivorous dinosaur, move in herds and eat with your friends. And then if you're a carnivorous dinosaur, hunt those people. So I wouldn't be surprised to see more of those. I wouldn't be surprised if more and more games try to be a little bit more accurate, because there does seem to be a growing interest. And Jake will back me up on this one, I'm sure, but gamer communities are very keen, shall we say.
I was going to say exhausting, but okay.
Very keen to see, you know, things be accurate and to be realistic. And there does seem to be like a growing appetite for that kind of stuff. So I wouldn't be surprised if that happens. But I do think that, you know, a lot of the tropes that we talk about will just continue. Because they're easy and quick to do and don't take a lot of thought.
I think there is a bit of a kind of arms race almost of people making games like Saurian at the moment. A lot of them are sort of in sort of early development, alpha, beta sort of stages. I guess the future is those games getting finished and sort of, you know, pushing ever forward. There's a game that came out, unfortunately, pretty much after we'd mostly finished the paper of like the Prehistoric Kingdom, which from what I've heard, I've not played it yet, looks really amazing. And clearly they've focused in on depicting these animals accurately. I think that we're basically going to see this almost divergence of games becoming increasingly honing in on accuracy, but also going the other way as well, as games just get more out there and more ridiculous. I think there are games coming out soon that are just insane in terms of the monstrification of the animals. I think I saw a trailer where there was literally a waterfall of velociraptors just pouring from the sky into a city.
Which, that sounds absolutely mad.
I know.
You can't say it didn't happen.
Yeah, that's true. There's no fossil evidence for it, but there's no fossil evidence against it.
Mm-hmm.
I do think, though, that what I will say is I do think, though, that there does seem to be a growing appetite for more diversity in terms of like ancient animal groups. There seems to be like a lot more little niche games coming out now where it's not just focusing on dinosaurs. You know, we had Ancestor Odyssey come out recently, which looks at the early evolution of hominids and, you know, contains lots of really interesting animals. We talked a bit about Abzu. Yeah, I think that we will start to see more and more. I think there's a game, isn't there, that focuses on sugar gliders that's just come out. So, I don't know. I think, you know, the games, they have to try and find their niche in order to sell, I guess. And so hopefully we'll see a lot more diversity.
Maybe as game development becomes more and more accessible over time, you're going to get more people making games about the niche periods of Earth history that they find interesting.
I think what needs to happen is video game companies need to take on more paleontology consultants, and I am always available. Just
I think we all are, aren't we?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, get in touch with us all.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, what was the reception to your paper like, both from the academic side, what did other researchers think of your paper? And from the public. Were the researchers like, oh, why are these guys looking at computer games? It's not worthwhile. And were the public like, whoa, leave our computer games alone. These are our babies. We love them. Just why are you messing with something that's just entertainment?
Well... on the positive side, we did get a lot of love for the paper from a lot of fellow paleontologists, and a friend told me that our paper kind of made the rounds among sort of paleo artists on Discord, and there was a lot of love for it there, which makes me very happy.
I think a lot of colleagues that play games have been very positive. Yes. And have because they play these games and they see these tropes and they, you know, they get it. And so a lot of my colleagues that do play video games have messaged us and been like, oh yeah, I understand totally why you did that. Hmm. The public perception or the public interaction with our video game has been in paper has been very mixed. Yes. We've been spying on quite a few gaming forums and interesting. To say the least.
Yeah, I think some gamers, you know, took what is essentially a paper aimed at science communicators as a guide of a public perception as a personal attack on their hobby, which was not what we intended to do. They took it very personally and seemed to think that, you know, all this is a bunch of paleontologists complaining about inaccurate dinosaurs, which realistically is not... It's only a very small part of the paper. That's not what we're trying to do.
And also, I think really important here, because it kind of loops back into this podcast, I suppose, in a weird way, be going full meta, is that they, you know, in the paper, we were very careful with our wording to make it not that X game is bad. X yes. game is the worst. Because that is so counterintuitive. That's not what I'm looking for. That's so unimportant and not actually useful in any way. But yet many of the people got very upset that we might have mentioned their favorite video game. And, you know, it was clear from a lot of the forums that most of them hadn't even read the paper. They just, yes. you know, scanned looking for their favorite video game. And then when they found it and said that when we said something bad about it or whatever, they then just absolutely went off on one. That was very interesting. I thought one thing that was really interesting was that there were a lot of people who repeatedly asked on these forums, like, why would scientists waste their time with this? Like, why, you know, who funds this kind of work and why would they bother? And I think the simple answer for that is that doing science is the most, like, the biggest part of my job, but communicating my science and communicating the science that we do is also a massive part of our job. And if part of that involves video games, then of course it makes sense for us to write these kind of papers, because then other scientists can look at it and then say, you know, whether or not they agree with us or don't agree with us, and then we can start a conversation about it. So I thought that was really interesting.
Some people are actually really happy that we'd made a paper about video games, though. I think a lot of people didn't know you could do that in a weird way, which I actually didn't know when we first started. There was one comment that I absolutely loved where it was like, I can't remember the exact wording of it now, but it was basically how, you know, gamers for years have been saying to take our hobby seriously, and then paleontologists do that, and the gamers say, no, not like that, which I thought was very funny.
Yeah. I mean, I will say that on one forum, it did culminate in someone alluding to death threats, which was kind of intense.
That was pretty wild.
Pretty wild. you know, generally speaking, the people that seemed to read the paper seemed to get it. And then they, you know, there were some really, really positive and useful discussions that were had in some of the forums. So I was really happy with some of that.
Good stuff. Okay, well, we will leave it there and maybe go play a multiplayer game.
Let's go kill some velociraptors.
Orion Prelude it is, then.
Yes.
All right. Thank you both for coming on the show today.
Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Paleocast was brought to you by Dave Marshall and Liz Martin Silverstone, with contributions from Tom Fletcher, Vish Venkat, and Elsa Pancharoli. Music was composed by Patrick Kendall-Smith. PaleoCast was made possible by funding from the Paleontological Society and the Paleontological Association, but the show now relies on funding from you, the listeners. So, if you've liked this episode, please consider donating, and thanks to everyone that's helped out so far. Please visit paleocast.com for the supplementary material to this episode and for our archive of past programs, and follow us across social media platforms to get all the latest news. Finally, if you enjoy our podcast, then please explore all of our video content on YouTube and follow our other projects, the Virtual Natural History Museum and the PaleoCast Gaming Network.